Welcome to Configure It Done, the podcast where SAP leaders share real insights, proven strategies, and stories from front lines of major SAP transformations. Get inspired, get informed, let's get it done.
Yeah, welcome back to the Configure It Done podcast. Che, you've got a fantastic guest on today, and I believe it was Lexi Thorogood that recommended this guest.
Yeah, it certainly was. We recorded the podcast with Lexi, I think a few years back.
And she, 4 years ago, I think. Yeah.
Some time back, yeah.
Long time ago.
She recommended Paul to come on, and someone who'd be certainly someone good on the podcast. And here we are a few years later, Paul. So, yeah, good to have you on, really.
No, thank you. Lexi's a lovely human.
Brilliant. Well, obviously, thanks for coming on, Paul. And obviously, you've got quite a unique background, working at, all kind of three different sides, really, SAP themselves, Google, and now DXC. So it'd be good if you could give kind of our audience a bit of a journey of your life so far and how we got here.
Definitely start with the rugby as well. We've just been talking about rugby prior to the recording starting. So the three organizations, I think across those different three, does bring a different perspective, particularly to the SAP audience who might be listening here.
Yeah,
but just touching on the rugby, and we were talking about this briefly before, talking about perspective. One of the things that I learned very early on from rugby, which has held me in good stead all the way through, is a story about perspective. So just frame it quickly. I had been playing in Glasgow, playing in Scotland, and had played a game in sort of October timeframe. Broken my leg during the game, had a bit of time off, and then got a call from my agent saying, hey, there's a club in France that might be interested. Cool. Okay, I'm going to go along. So I ended up signing for that club as a medical joker, went down in February, middle of winter in France. And our first game was a home game against Bayonne, and massive local derby, full house. And I hadn't played in kind of 8-9 weeks. Fitness wasn't where it needed to be. And I was playing in the second row, which is a position I wasn't used to. And my second row partner was Garrick Morgan, who was a Wallaby. He played 40-odd tests and ended up playing rugby league. Anyway, I got on the bus. I'm sitting next to Garrick and we're chatting. And I go, mate, I'm feeling it. I'm heart's going, not sure what this is going to hold for me. I'm not ready. I don't speak French particularly well. I haven't had a lot of time to train. And he's a big Queenslander, big human. And he goes, mate, you've faced the All Blacks, you've faced the Haka, all that sort of stuff. And he goes, mate, you watch Saving Private Ryan?
Yeah.
And they're going, what?
I said, what's that got to do with it?
Yeah. And bear in mind, this is kind of 2006. He goes, watch Saving Private Ryan? I go, yeah. He goes, remember the start of Saving Private Ryan where they attacked the beaches on D-Day?
Yeah.
Mate, we're just playing footy. And I kind of went, what? Like that whole perspective shift was a really cool story. Just put everything in perspective. We're just playing footy. We're not attacking the beaches of D-Day. So anyway, that was a good story, but I digress around the perspective piece. The Google SAP DFC perspective, I think for organizations that are thinking about their environment now, hyperscalers are an increasingly important part of that. And SAP has been a part of that for 45, 50 years.
Yeah.
So I think bringing those three different organizations together does bring a different perspective.
So touching on that, those three, where are our customers getting it wrong on programs with hyperscalers?
Not necessarily just with hyperscalers. I think SAP programs for a long time have had, you guys, how many stories around SAP programs going this way, that way?
Yeah.
You must have a lot.
A lot.
Yeah. Until you speak to candidates and they deliver it on time and on budget every time. But
every time. And those are the only stories you're going to hear from me today. Yeah. But no, it's not just about, I think it's not just about the SAP programs. Where are they getting it wrong? Silos. And we talked about this briefly before. Everybody's set up in silos. Even SIs are set up in silos. I look after the SAP practice. We've got an Oracle practice. We've got a Microsoft practice. SAP is set up the same way. They're set up in a line of business, and customers are set up the same way as well. They've got an SAP team. And when they come to market for an SAP upgrade, they're going from ECC 6 to S4. It's about the upgrade. It's not about the overall landscape. And there's a part of that, but one of the biggest challenges I see with organizations now are those silos. How are you thinking about it? And you spoke about a candidate that you're looking for at the moment. With an enterprise perspective, that's what I'd encourage organizations to think about.
Does Google have that as well, that kind of individual silos, or is that because you look at Google and you think, well, that's a really modern company, forward thinking, and but yeah, would they have the individual silos as well?
Well, and I'm keen for your guys' perspective there as well. When you look at an organization, I'd say SAP 20 years ago was 50% of the IT.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the engine. It did most of it. What do you reckon the percentage is now of an organization's enterprise stack, SAP of that overall stack? How much?
It's a good question. It depends on the organization. But
10?
Yeah. A lot less, I would have thought.
Less?
Yeah.
It's still an important part, but the innovations coming out of the hyperscalers, the growth of the ServiceNows and the Salesforces and those niche solutions, SAP is still important, but the complexity around a landscape, I mean, well, data strategy. Where's your data coming from? Everywhere. It's complicated.
Yeah. It's, I think the conversations that we've been having a lot with certain clients is certainly around that data piece. You know, this it's so kind of important, pivotal now, nowadays as well. And I think when we were chatting, Paul, before obviously the podcast, we were on about kind of S4, RISE, how they're not just kind of technical decisions. Obviously, it's kind of commercial as well, right? So I guess from your perspective, with organizations that are yet to move to S4 and RISE, how should they be thinking about kind of structuring the relationship between SAP, the SI, and the hyperscaler to get kind of the best commercial and technical outcomes, would you say?
Well, commercial, technical, I mean, ultimately it comes back to people. And I mean, nobody knows it probably better than, you know, the precision sourcing guys. When you look at an SAP project, what type of resources are people asking you for?
It's those resources that can take the business on the journey.
It's the soft skills, right?
Yeah, it's the soft skills. You don't need the techie in the corner anymore. It's it's people that can workshop, people that can take the business on the journey. Yeah,
and someone who's delivered on time, on budget. Those people, those project directors, I mean, they're like hen's teeth. Mm. And if you get one of those, you've got to hang on to. I mean, I'm sure you guys, when you come across a good one, you want to tell the world about it.
Yeah, 100%. And there's not many in the market at all. You may or may not know, there's 12,500 resources, but we've narrowed that down to, it's actually only 4,500 that would add value. But to your point around program directors, yeah, they are like hen's teeth. And a lot of them are retiring now as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think if you look at some of the SAP programs we've been involved with, and it could be anything, So DXC takes a capability approach. Coming back to the silo piece, if you're looking at an HR business process, that end-to-end process, that's how we want organizations to think, and that's how we set ourselves up. But to give an example of an S4 project, which was a really good project. So a mining organization acquired a couple of mines from BHP. This is Whitehaven Coal. They needed to roll out SAP. They had the challenge of transition use rights, which most of the SAP world will know about, and transition services. And they decided not to go down that path. And they rolled out S4 success factors. They did it on a Microsoft platform. They did that in 121 days.
Mm.
And there was a cliff at the end of that because they made that decision. So it was something that they were going to deliver, or we were going to deliver together with them. And that was a really great project. And that CIO has been to Sapphire and told that story. But those are the kinds of programs that you look at and go, why did that program go so well? And for me, it comes down to two things. The relationship with the customer, like that partnership, and that's an overused word, but when a customer shares the information and is working with you to get to that outcome, and the hyperscaler is doing it and SAP is doing, that's where the value is.
Yeah. It sounded like in that program, they didn't outsource the accountability. Like they kept a lot of that as well. And like we know Nick, the CIO, and he actually done an event for us, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Jay, and he spoke about that program. But yeah, I think partnership and trust, and I mean, to do that program that quick, and it had to have all the above.
And you think about, I think one of the important things to think about is what does each, if you think about those four organizations, if you like, that are part of that program, what do each of those four want to get out of it? So what does SAP want to get out of their engagement with customer.
Success.
Yeah. They also want on time, on budget. They want a licensed transaction in their time frame.
Mm-hmm.
What about the hyperscale?
Success.
Yeah. They also want, I mean, if I look at all the hyperscalers at the moment, they're a consumption business.
Mm-hmm.
So the faster you're live and you're ramped up, the more revenue they make. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's a secret in the market, but SAP workloads, particularly for the hyperscalers, are sought after like you would not believe. Why do you think that is?
That us?
Because they're so sticky.
Mm-hmm.
SAP lands, and it lands for a decade, and it runs. So that consumption just runs.
Yeah.
And additionally, the workloads that orbit SAP, they tend to land on that same platform as well. So when I was at Google, we looked at our own business and our competitors. And so an Azure platform, an AWS platform, or a Google platform, if you land an SAP workload, you can bank on somewhere like 6-7, sometimes more times the revenue because of other workloads that you'll land, because you land that initial ERP. So they hunt those hard. And that's an opportunity for customers. It's an opportunity for SIs, because the funding that they'll put towards that initial investment is substantial.
Yeah. Wow. Well, yeah. Once you have SAP, it's kind of bulletproof. It's recession proof. That's why we recruit in that market as well, because the licenses are so expensive. And yeah, once a customer goes down that road, they're not coming out for 20, 25 years, probably. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the AI, the SaaSpocalypse, or whatever they're calling it at the moment. I don't know. I'm not going to step into that. I'm not well enough informed. It is an interesting time, though.
Yeah. We've got a question here, Paul, that we came up with before around, one strategy or three. So you've got cloud, you've got data, and then obviously SAP. And you often hear cloud strategy. You often hear data strategy, and then obviously SAP strategy, and discussed separately. And I think you mentioned before, in a different topic around silos, but in reality, how should these be aligned?
Well, think, how many of these interviews have you guys done?
This is probably 70 now. Yeah.
70.
Yeah.
And I imagine you've heard a lot of customer stories.
Yeah.
And success stories.
Mm-hmm.
What do you put success stories down to?
People.
People?
Yeah. People make projects. That's the overriding thing that I've learned through these conversations. Technology works.
Yep.
It's the people. So yeah, your stakeholders in your organization, it's having the best people to deliver the program. So yeah, it always comes down to people, I believe, from these conversations.
So when, to come back to your question around data strategy, SAP strategy, cloud strategy, how many times does someone come and tell a story about, oh, we did our research and we had the best cloud strategy?
All the time, yeah.
Well, I mean, they do, but are the clouds that different?
Yeah.
Is SAP that different from some of the other techs?
Yeah.
I mean, in some cases, yes, for manufacturing and for retail and a few others, yeah, it's got some unique technologies, but it's not that different.
Mm-hmm.
Are the SIs that different in terms of the offerings and otherwise?
Mm.
We would argue we've got very good engineering. We're not quite as... A DC, I'd say, is not quite as salesy as some of the others. We're not as slick as the Accentures and others when they go and present. And we certainly don't do as good a job as they do at the CEO level. But I would say our engineering is second to none. But coming back to your story about people, when we think about the projects that we've done, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of those, the story is, what are people doing, and how good were those individuals, and how well were they working with the customer, and was there that level of trust? The biggest gap for an SI going into a project is at the start.
Mm.
It's the scoping.
Yeah.
Because if you mess up the scoping, everything breaks.
Mm.
Like you're not making money, you're under pressure, suddenly you need to think about a resourcing mix. That means the customer might not be getting your A team because you're looking at it going, can't afford the A team because I need to maintain the profitability on that. So if the work's not done at the very, very front, and the customer isn't open and upfront about where the challenges are and what this is actually going to cost, that becomes a challenge.
Mm.
Yeah. And lastly, I think you mentioned there, obviously you've gone through one kind of example, Paul. Can you kind of tell the audience around any, I guess, any real life project takeaways or standouts that you've kind of had in your career so far?
Well, coming back to Jay's point about people, I think at the end of a program, when people are proud of what they've done, whether that be the customer or our team, that's where you just go, do you know what? That was a really good piece of work. So if I look at a couple of things that DXC does, we support defense, the SAP environment at defense. And when you think about what Australian defense personnel, those warfighters are doing and putting their potentially themselves on the line for the country, you think we support that. That's really important work. That's something that we can't mess up. Another piece of work we did around Parkinson's. So we're not on camera here, but I'll tell the story. So we built an app on SAP's BTP platform where an individual will draw a spiral. So you start and you draw a spiral and you film that. And from that film, from that video, they can make judgments on that person's risk around Parkinson's and whether that's something that they should be aware of. Now, that's using AI and a whole bunch of different things, but built on SAP's BTP platform. And when you think about things like Parkinson's and otherwise, which have an impact on so many different people, that's a really cool project. You come away from that going, that's cool. Like, that's something DXC and SAP and the rest of us should be really proud of.
Yeah.
You hear a lot of senior people, and we ask that question about what success looks like to them. And I remember interviewing a guy called Clive Mansi. I don't know if you know him or come across him in the market. And he said success for him is when you're having a reunion with that project team in 10 years in the pub and you're like proud of what you've achieved. He said that's what success is. And that kind of, I reflected on that. I said, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a great, that's a great measure of success.
Yeah. Excellent. So, Paul, just to close the podcast, obviously you've been on all three sides. If I was at C-level or a program manager and I was looking at embarking on an S4 program, what would be your top three tips or your top three points, knowing that you've been on SAP side, the hyperscaler, and now the SI? And I know you've obviously mentioned one was around strategy, but what would be your top three?
So start on a worst case scenario. So you think about those projects that have been an absolute disaster and why. And it could be anything. It could be an SAP program. It could be, you guys would probably be familiar with that Mars Orbiter program that was built where one team was building in centimeters and kilograms and one team was building in, inches and pounds, and they came together and, the orbiter burned up on entry. And you look at that and go, why did that not work? And coming back to your point about people, two things for me, the people weren't aligned. They weren't communicating as part of that piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, the work up front hadn't been done to design that end-to-end program and look at and really open the kimono. So if I was a senior executive that you referred to, probably the one thing that I would do at the start would be to measure twice, cut once. Do your work up front. Get the scoping done. Get multiple organizations to come in and support you to look at what that program can look like. Get in your hyperscaler. Get your SI in. Get your vendor in. Get your team in. Make sure everybody's aligned. I remember when I was working at SAP, we did a program with Macquarie Bank and it was their core banking platform. So Macquarie is now the fifth retail bank. This was at the very start of that, so 2014. And I remember the CEO of the retail bank standing up there and had, it was Accenture at the time, SAP his organization. And they've got a slightly different culture, Macquarie Bank, so we won't go into the culture side of it. But he said, we are delivering this program in 9 months and this is the team that's going to do it. Come together and deliver that. And they did. They did a phenomenal job delivering that program. That to me was an example of doing the work up front, making sure that you had the scoping done and then getting the team together and making sure that they stay tight.
I like that. I think Whitehaven Coal had this as well. That it seems like the timescale and having a lot of pressure around that and a date that doesn't move seems to be like a common theme I'm hearing as well.
I'm pretty sure that Nick mentioned something about like using to your advantage, something along those lines.
But even like if you look at Fuku Suntory, or now called Centauri Group. That was a 4-year transformation, but they always had a hard deadline. So I don't know, there might be something in that around pressure, but not to get your view on that.
I think people react in different ways under pressure. It can make a team or it can break a team.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't necessarily want to inflict pressure on every single team. If you've done the work up front, it's like a sporting analogy. If you've done the preseason, you've done the work and you trust the process, then you can get into that golden point. You can get into extra time and trust that you're going to get there. I think coming back to that work up front, that's what we're trying to focus on at DFC, really getting that scoping done well and asking the customer to be as transparent with us as possible to make sure we get there. Because no one wants to get to a steerco and you sit there and you're pushing out dates and then they've got to communicate that to their executive and then costs are ballooning and then you're looking at your margins and you're thinking, is this going to get us the best outcome and can we just get to the end and fall over the line? That's a crap place to be.
Yeah. I like the pre-season analogy. Cool. But thank you for coming on today on the podcast. Some brilliant insights thank you, Che, for inviting Paul.
Well, thanks so much, Paul.
Pleasure. Thank you very much, guys.